Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's time to talk politics. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN.
And welcome to Hardline. This is Kevin Hardwick. Happy Father's Day out there to all you fathers. A big day for us all. Half an hour from now, we'll be joined live in studio by Patrick Kaler. Patrick is president and CEO of Visit Buffalo Niagara. Visit Buffalo Niagara. Some of you may not be familiar with that. It used to be the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Later on, we'll be joined live in studio by Buffalo Niagara Film Commissioner Tim Clark. My goal today is to get myself a position as an extra in a feature film coming up. We'll see if we succeed. Right now in studio, however, I'm joined by my celebrity. Yeah, that's right. Celebrity co-host, Bill Conrad. Town of Tonawanda Councilman. Bill, welcome. Happy Father's Day to you. Now, you
Happy Father's Day. Thanks for having me.
I'm kind of a father, but I'm not so much an active father because my kids are mostly
You're always an active father. Yes.
You're actually raising kids. And I don't want to talk about you. I want to talk about your wife,
sure.
Mary Kate.
And you
because,
should.
Because I, well, the talent in the family.
I heard
coming in on Randy Bushover's morning news, an ad for Lord of the Dance is coming to one of the casinos. Now, is your wife, you told me she was in Riverdance, right?
No. She had tried out for Riverdance.
She tried out for Riverdance.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But she had danced at a national championship, or I'm sorry, world championship level.
And she teaches Irish dancing now, and you are the rugby coach and a social studies professor.
Teacher.
In that order.
Yep.
At Ken West. Listen, Bill and I have a couple of callers this half hour. First one is a repeat, an Amherst boy who's made good in D.C., Chris Malagisi. Chris is currently the editor-in-chief of the Conservative Book Club, and he joins us now via the WBEN live line. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, and happy Father's Day to you.
Well, happy Father's Day to you, and there's some news in that regard. This is your first Father's Day, is it not? Do you want to announce to all your friends back in Buffalo what the deal is?
Thank you. Yeah, it is. My wife gave birth to our son last week, Ethan Nicholas Koval Malagisi, and he's 11 days old. And, our first Father's Day, it's going great. I slept more than 4 hours last night.
Congratulations. Do you feel kind of guilty that your first Father's Day is before your wife's first Mother's Day? I mean, you didn't plan that well, did you? Shouldn't Mother's Day come before Father's Day?
We did celebrate in the womb. She was still a mother, so we...
Okay, all right. Good plan.
Good plan.
Listen, you're the editor-in-chief of the Conservative Book Club. Read any good books lately or talked to any interesting authors?
Absolutely. Conservative Book Club are based in the swamp here in D.C. 750,000 members across the country. We let everybody know about new, the latest and greatest books out. And definitely two books. If you are interested, Newt Gingrich's new book, Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. It's number one right now in our conservative book bestseller list, but it's a great overview of the Trump administration and what they've been able to accomplish so far and the challenges that they dealt with. The one that's really my favorite right now, and I strongly recommend this book, is Jordan Peterson's new book, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. It was a number one New York Times bestselling book, too, and perhaps many of your listeners know about him. Kind of become an on-campus free speech folk hero who's been able to engage in debates when he's not being shouted down about how science and politics are intertwined, and that there's much we can learn, not only in the Western tradition of liberty, but of tradition and order, and that could be the antidote to the political and social chaos that has been stewing over the last couple of decades. And it's a wonderful book, Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life.
Now, did you actually conduct an interview with him, and is it available on a podcast?
We are working on the interview with him. We do have a national podcast. Thank you very much. We just interviewed Ainsley Earhart from Fox News' Fox and Friends. And she's one of the co-hosts of new book, The Light Within. And, yeah, we do a weekly podcast every Wednesday. And, yeah, we're working on Jordan Peterson. We're going to get him.
And those podcasts are available where?
ConservativeBookClub.com/podcast.
Very good. Hey, I got to ask you. I mean, Bill Conrad, my co-host, and I are up here in we both are from Tonawanda, but we're in the Buffalo area. You're down there in D.C. I've been seeing a lot. I keep seeing a lot on the front page of newspapers, this photo of this little girl being taken from her mother, or actually her mother is being frisked. I'm not sure she's being taken in this photo. But it really is it not creating a backlash against the Trump immigration policy? And then are people down there talking about it? And do you think that it's going to bring about a change?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these pictures have been just heart-wrenching. But, you know, looking at this and looking at what's going on, I think we have to put it in context a little bit here. Like, what's going on? Why are we seeing these pictures in the first place? And people have to remember that this is due to a policy that actually started in the Clinton administration in 1997. And it's about when people come to our country illegally. Usually, they cross the border with their families. And for a short period of time, there's a separation that occurs with the parents and children to make sure that those are the parents of the children that are coming over. And usually within a day or two, that's resolved. But the problem that we're seeing that we've heard about all in the last week or two is about if those same people that are crossing our border illegally decide to also claim asylum, political asylum, something completely different. And apparently, according to ICE, the Immigration and Border Control, they say 80% of the people that come across our border that claim political asylum, 80% of them are bogus. They're not real. But what happens is if someone does come, according to our current law, you have to allow that person to have an opportunity to present their case in court, which means that could take more than just a day or two. We're talking a couple weeks where there's this separation that might occur. And it's a shame because, yeah, if we see these pictures of all these children being held in shelters.
You mentioned a day or two. I mean, regardless of who started the policy, just for everyday people, I think that's such a hard thing to grasp, you know, to be separated from a child for 2 days possibly.
It is. I mean, it absolutely is, and it's tough, and it's, you know, I wish our Congress would get their act together and pass some immigration reform that would actually deal with this and fix this type of thing, and they can do that. They've got two bills right now. They've got the Bob Goodlatte bill, which is a bill that is a congressman in Virginia, but it's a conservative immigration reform bill, and Paul Ryan and some of the more moderate Republicans are working on another immigration bill that's going to come up in the next week or two. President Trump is actually going to meet with the Republican House caucus on Tuesday to talk about how they can resolve these type of issues. And
you mentioned earlier the Clinton administration and this policy going back to then. I hearken back to the Clinton administration, another famous photo, iconic photo that came out of that, and that was the Elian Gonzalez photo, remember?
Mm-hmm.
With the federal agents in full body armor and everything, and the gun and the kid's face, and the outrage that created. I mean, I think that's comparable to what's happened here. And you would hope that there's some discretion someplace that maybe someone somewhere would rethink this policy, because it's probably not going to get any easier. I mean, this publicity is going to increase. Let me change this.
Just even caveat on that. I think about that photo from Europe, from the African immigrants coming in. I mean, the lifeless body on the beach. I mean, that had ramifications.
The pictures are powerful. Let me change the subject quickly. We've only got a couple more minutes, Chris, and I do appreciate you being here. The FBI and investigation. Inspector General's report, pretty damning, from all sides of the FBI and both sides of the, you know, Trump, anti-Trump argument investigation are finding fodder here, are they not? I mean, it's not good for the institution, the FBI.
Oh, it's just awful for the institution of the FBI. Yeah, of course, everybody's talking about this in the swamp. This week, the immigration in North Korea, but definitely the FBI IG report. Look, I think we have to remember, what is this report all about in the first place? This is about Hillary Clinton's mishandling classified information. That's what started this whole investigation in the first place. And while the report is careful in its conclusions, I think it's pretty damning in its facts. Hillary did not, the FBI did not prosecute her and gave her special treatment to a presidential candidate and gave none of the same thing to Donald Trump in the so-called Russian collusion investigation. And, you know, when you look at all the text messages and the FBI agents and the bias, you got to ask, where, you notice there's no pro-Trump texts, there's no anti-Hillary texts, there's no pro-Trump FBI officials, no anti-Hillary officials. It's unfortunate because this bias is so pervasive, and it really does, for half of America, they're just not even paying attention to it. And it's sad because the FBI is a really important part of our law enforcement, and we need to have an FBI that people respect. And I don't know, when you go look through the report, I don't trust the media on this. You can read the report. It's online. Mm-hmm. It is 500 pages, and if you know, some things, though, to point out, though, is there was definitely, the IG did state that there was insubordination and bias. And while he concluded, I think wrongly, that there was no bias that tainted the investigation, he did say that there was serious error of judgment on behalf of FBI Director Comey. He concealed information from his superiors, violated or disregarded departmental bureau policies. And the irony, Kevin, is that Comey used a private email himself.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is just weird. And
everything has bias. I mean,
again, this Inspector General report just focuses on the Hillary Clinton email thing. I mean, there's a whole other question of what's going on with the Russia investigation, and that's something, you know, most people want the FBI, if our elections are being compromised by a foreign adversary, you want the FBI involved, and this just, their credibility is in question now, and it's just not a good situation.
Absolutely.
So being that you're, again, you opened up by saying you're down there in the swamp, you want to come back? I mean, you're welcome back here. I mean, it's a nice place now that you have a family. I mean, a kid. Nice place to raise young Ethan.
I love Buffalo, New York. It'll always be my home. My father's there, Nick Malagisi, and my uncle, Steve Colatas. I wish them happy Father's Day, too. And it will always be home for me, and we're going to be coming home.
Well, all this bad stuff, that's a nice note to end on. And again, happy Father's Day. Thanks for joining us today, Chris.
All right. Happy Father's Day to you.
All right. We have to take a break now. Thanks again to Chris Malagisi, editor-in-chief of the Conservative Book Club. When we come back, we'll be joined by the guy that many people blame for bringing me to Western New York, Peter J. Gailey, former chairman of the political science department at Canisius College. We'll be talking about the lieutenant governor, which not Kathy Hochul per se, but the job of the lieutenant governor, because it's created a lot of questions in Albany with the Senate being deadlocked 31-31. What can the lieutenant governor do? What can't the lieutenant governor do? Anyway, when we return, Bill Conrad, my co-host, will be here. I'll be here. I'm Kevin Hardwick. You're listening to Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. And welcome back to the program. This is Kevin Hardwick sitting here with celebrity co-host, Tonawanda Councilman Bill Conrad, my good friend. Happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you all. To make this a little bit more less stressful for me, I apologize to super producer Joe Beamer about this. This is going to be a Mets-free program. We're not going to talk about the Mets today because that just
wrong.
The one win in a row. That just raises my blood pressure. Listen, speaking about blood pressure, a lot of people are mad that I'm even in Western New York. The person to blame for that, of course, is the former chair of the political science department at Canisius College, Peter J. Gailey. He joins us now on the live line. Peter, welcome to the program. How you doing?
I'm fine on this wonderful Happy Father's
Day. Happy Father's Day. Now, before we get into what we called you about, you have a perfect perch there, right there on West River Road on Grand Island, overlooking the lawnmower races. Have the festivities started? Because Father's Day, your friend Floyd, you introduced me to these, has his lawnmower races, right?
I think that's I think it's on the 4th of July, but I'm not sure because...
I thought it was on Father's Day.
I think it's the 4th of July.
4th of July? Well...
This is your district.
This is my district. I should know this. I thought it was Father's Day. There's nothing going on there.
Is there any resident...
Is there anyone outside your
racing
house now?
Racing a lawnmower.
With right a now. Lawnmower.
Woman running with her dog.
Okay. Well, there you have it. On the spot, live report. Listen, that's not why we called you. I wanted to bring you on because the last few weeks, the New York State Senate has been kind of in a stalemate because a member of the Senate, a Republican member, got called to active duty in the Navy, I believe, and they're left with there are 63 members, but now they're deadlocked 31-31. And the question that's been looming there is, what is the role of the lieutenant governor? What can the lieutenant governor do in breaking ties? What ties can they break? Democrats see an opening here. They say, aha, we've got the lieutenant governor. Just happens to be Kathy Hochul, currently from Western New York. But regardless, they think that they can actually accomplish things that they couldn't earlier. Now, you have written a couple books and countless articles on the New York State Constitution. If anybody can answer this question, it's Peter J. Gailey. Peter, what's the answer?
Oh, well, the answer is yes.
Yes, yes to what?
Well, the lieutenant governor's office in New York State is, for a lot of reasons, both an embarrassment and a mess. I say that because a number of very important issues about this lieutenant governor's office have never been resolved. One of them is the casting vote. So you have this role as a casting vote given to the lieutenant governor, who, by the way, is described in the executive article, not the legislative article, the legislative activity. That starts things off, I think, on the wrong foot. And you also have this difference in opinion as to what a casting vote is. If you look at the medieval and English common law tradition, casting law vote means a vote to break a tie. That's not what it means in New York, because everyone agrees, apparently, that the casting vote can be cast, but not for matters of substance. And it can't be in New York because of a provision in the Constitution which says that you have to be a member of the Senate to vote on a piece of legislation.
So unlike vice president, the lieutenant governor is not president of the Senate? Sure,
Is
the lieutenant governor president of the Senate?
He is, but he does not have a vote on a substantive policy issue because of another provision in the New York State Constitution, which says you have to be a member. He is not a member of the Senate.
I see.
And so, unlike the Vice President of the United States, who can cast a vote on a substantive
matter,
the governor cannot. The issue is not whether the issue really is whether he can cast a vote at all. The Republicans apparently are claiming that he can't cast it.
Well, what can they do then? What can the lieutenant governor do?
Well, I think the answer is, I believe that the history indicates that the lieutenant governor can cast a vote on matters of procedure.
I see.
So now, when it comes to substance, no, but when procedure, yes?
I think in question, what is a procedural matter?
So like adding an amendment to a bill, they can do that. But then when it comes to voting on the bill itself, they cannot break the tie.
That's one reasonable interpretation of how the limits on this provision casting a vote.
Well, I'm nothing if not reasonable. Here, here we're up against Alan Harris in the bottom of the hour news, but here I was hoping we could find clarity here. And you've just told us that really the lieutenant governor can't do what we thought the lieutenant governor could do.
Is she nothing more than a liaison to the federal government then?
Yeah. Anyway, Peter, sorry there are no lawnmower races there today. We do have to break, but thank you for joining us today, and enjoy the lawnmower races whenever they are.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, thanks. That was Peter Gailey, former head of the political science department at Canisius College. We have to take a break now. Alan Harris is standing by. When we come back, Bill Conrad, my guest host, and And I will be joined by Patrick Kaler, CEO and president of the Visit Buffalo Niagara. And we'll be talking about a variety of issues. Anyway, I'm Kevin Hardwick. You're listening to Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. And welcome back to Hardline. Kevin Hardwick here. In a moment, we'll be getting to Patrick Kaler, president and CEO of Visit Buffalo Niagara. If you have a question for Patrick about, I don't know, anything we're doing touristy here or anything at all, feel free to call us at 803-0930. But before we do that, my co-host, Bill Conrad from Tonawanda Council has cleared up some of the confusion that I created a few minutes ago when I was talking to Peter Gailey about the lawnmower races.
Because they were
always Father's Day, not the 4th of July.
I hate to admit this, but you were correct. It was regularly scheduled for Father's Day. However, it was moved to September 15th at Veterans Park for a fall Father's Day spectacular.
Well, I guess it's stretching Father's Day out. That's fine. Listen,
that's a good thing.
let's turn to the man sitting next to me, Patrick Kaler. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming in on this Father's Day. Give us a little background. You've been here for a few years now. You're actually staying here for a few years. Who would have thought?
I know. I
can remember when you came to my office in the county legislature, introduced yourself. You were coming from Virginia, was it,
at
the time?
Right outside.
And I said, oh, this guy will be here a year and he'll be gone. But no.
I just started my fifth year. Loving Buffalo. It's really the best job that I've ever had in my professional career. And I've been across the country. Like you said, I did come from Northern Virginia, right outside of D.C., D.C.'s wine country. And before that, I was in Los Angeles. I ran all the international offices for the Los Angeles Tourism Bureau. And before that, I was in Lake Tahoe. And previous to that, in Chicago, running the Great Lakes of North America, as well as a tour company in Chicago. And I grew up in the central Illinois portion of Illinois, down by University of Illinois, in a small town called Rantoul, Illinois.
Wow. What is it about this area that attracted you in the first place? Because certainly there had to be openings across the United States.
Well, I tell this story a lot, and I get a lot of chuckles out of it. When I was in Loudoun County, Virginia, the headhunter called me and said, hey, I've got this great opportunity in Buffalo. And I said, I think you should call me back when you've got a great opportunity. And I said, that's not Buffalo. Because honestly, I didn't know what was taking place. All I knew was that the Bills lost four Super Bowls, that there was a really bad snowstorm in 1977, and then really anything positive that Tim Russert would say on Meet the Press. And he said, no, you've really got to take a look at it, because he had actually had the job years before and is now a headhunter and a consultant. And I said, all right, I'll do some research. And when I started looking at what was taking place in Buffalo, and when I actually came to Buffalo on January 1st of 2014, there were 7 cranes in the air. The waterfront hadn't been developed. Harbor Center was still, under construction. They hadn't started anything at the Richardson Complex. And I thought, this is really the great place to be at the right time for somebody who does what I do. I'm going to be able to change the whole vernacular of how we market and promote this truly great destination.
Your timing was impeccable. When you talk about changing the marketing, what have been the big changes since you've been here?
Well, when I first got here in 2014, we started telling the story of the transformation that was taking place, because I said, really, that's kind of interesting, too, for visitors to come and see the Darwin Martin House under construction. Mm-hmm. And then they'll come back later on to see it completed. So I said, let's work off of that as well. Really, we have great architecture, history, arts and culture. We really have it all. We have 2 professional sports teams, 3 with the Bisons, or right now the Buffalo Wings. We've got great culinary. And I just really think that we are now truly a year-round destination. We are seeing our occupancy numbers for the winter months start to increase because of Canal Side. We've got people who are coming for leisure visitors, leisure activities in the winter, plus all of the new hockey tournaments that we're able to lure in those shoulder months as well. So it's a great destination.
Yeah, a lot of this comes together in the new video that a lot of people are talking about. Came out this week. I saw it on you know, someone had linked to it on Facebook or something, and people can't. I mean, there've been rave reviews. How did that come about? Did you guys pay for that?
We did. Actually, we kicked it off, and then we had some of our economic development partners, the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, Invest Buffalo, 43 North, the Larkin Development Corporation, because it also tells an economic development story, and that's one of the things that we've been doing on meetings and conventions, is telling those economic development stories for convention planners. To say, bring your meeting to Buffalo, and you can tie it into these major economic sectors that we have. So really, the video that is actually titled Right Here, Right Now is a time-lapse video. It has been 3 years in the making. We have hours and hours and hours of video footage that the first cut of it was 15 minutes. I said, we'll never get away with 15 minutes of video. And we chopped it down to about a little over 4 minutes. And it has gotten really great pickup. We've had over close to 400,000 views so far, and it hasn't even been out a week.
Now, is that internet only? Is that
yes.
It's social media, and that's you're hoping people around the nation see that?
Exactly. That's the great thing with social media and having things go viral. We have a YouTube channel, Visit Buffalo Niagara. It's on our Facebook page, and so many people are linking to it as well. It's just been a really great tool for everybody.
I have to say I'm extremely impressed by the video. And, you know, a lot of conversations are going around the country about the psychology of decline and how hard it is to get that psychology to reverse. And it seems like this is part of it. You know, I'm just overly impressed by some of the efforts that have been going on. I had a friend in from Houston. We went for dinner on Friday, and he just said, I can't imagine this place. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been back in 2 years. You know?
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's what we hear quite often is that, and that really plays into our overall advertising campaign as the Unexpected Buffalo, because when we bring in a meeting planner or a sports right holder or even just a leisure visitor, I didn't expect Buffalo to be this cool or this exciting. And so that's how that whole campaign kind of came to be, because that's what we were hearing from our customers, because they said, I didn't expect this.
Now, you yourself didn't have that expectation.
Exactly.
Now, how are you able to transmit that out then? How do you communicate that to the rest of the country?
Well, I'm very active on social media myself, and I took a lot of hard knocks from my friends and colleagues who said, really, you're going to Buffalo? And so I really make sure that all of my friends and family know what a great place this is. And so many people react to my Facebook post, because really I just litter it with all these great things that are happening. Said, oh my gosh, I've got to come to Buffalo. I have a cousin who constantly is saying, I really got to come to Buffalo because I didn't know that you had these really great things.
Okay, we have to take a quick break now. When we return, however, we'll talk about one of the missing pieces that was highlighted in a report that you commissioned that was made public this week. And of course, I'm speaking about the convention center. So we'll talk about all things convention center with Patrick Kaler, CEO and
Much
president
needed convention center.
Of Visit Buffalo Niagara. My co-host is Bill Conrad. I'm Kevin Hardwick. You're listening to Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. And welcome back to the program. Kevin Hardwick sitting here with my co-host, Tonawanda Councilman Bill Conrad. Also, Patrick Kaler, President and CEO of Visit Buffalo Niagara. In a few minutes, we'll be joined, well, about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Tim Clark, Buffalo Niagara Film Commissioner. Patrick, let's talk about that study that came out this week that you guys commissioned on our pluses, our minuses. Look, you know, we look really good with one glaring exception, and that's our convention center, which comes off as like a huge liability.
That's right. Well, this week we released the results of a Destination Next study through Destinations International. That's kind of the overall organization for destination marketing organizations such as Visit Buffalo Niagara. And they have a 20-point system that they look at a destination through the lens of through a perception lens of our customers, our local business community, our stakeholders, and so how they grade our destination. So this doesn't look at our visitors, but the convention center came in at the lowest on a scale of 1 to 5. It came in at a 2.73. It was the lowest variable out of all of the things on the report, but you know, our convention center is turning 40 this year. I right now I'm saying it's a museum piece.
In addition to everything else, I couldn't believe I read in the article that our ceiling is 4 inches too low to host volleyball tournaments.
That's right. So even when
four
we talk
4 inches too low,
4 inches too low. So when we talk about the convention center, it's not just about meetings and conventions.
Volleyball is now a game of inches. Forget about football.
It is. Can we put those dampers up a little higher?
Yeah.
But when we talk about the convention center, it's not just about conventions.
Yeah.
We need something that can hold multi-purpose events. So whether it be a volleyball tournament or, you know, the home show, the car show, lots of different things that we can hold in a major facility.
There's a study ongoing.
Yes.
About and I know that the car dealers, it's tougher and tougher to get them back here.
Yes,
they have to sell this place because it's not what they're used to for the car shows.
That's right, and they're getting tight on space too. So they're starting to outgrow our convention center, and so they're looking at, you know, where else do we go. Western New York or in Buffalo.
Hasn't there been some success stories, though? Like Homeland Security had a big convention there. I mean, we're talking bad about it, but
right.
we have a really neat program, too.
We really do. The Convention Center in 2017, we had over 281 days out of the year that there was something happening, 148 events that took place in 2017. We actually had a record year of attendance with over 252,000 people walking through the convention center.
There is demand.
There is absolutely demand for a convention center or a big space.
What are we missing out on, though?
We're missing out on the ability to host multiple events. The entry to the convention center does not allow itself to divide itself and to hold multiple events, larger events. There is a database of meetings that are out there that if we narrow it down to meeting planners or events that would host something in the Northwest portion of the United mm-hmm. States, if we just say we doubled the size, we would increase the number of opportunities that we could pursue by about 2,400 different meetings that we would be able to bring to
the big question, of course, is can we afford a new convention center? How much
I was
would
just
it cost?
Go there.
And well, listen, we've got a caller calling in. By the way, if you want to call in for Patrick Kaler, have a question for him, president and CEO of Visit Buffalo Niagara, feel free to call us at 803-0930. But as I said, we do have Michael in Tonawanda has a question about the cost. And Michael, thank you for holding. You're on with Kevin Hardwick, Bill Conrad, and Patrick Kaler.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Listen, everybody. I wanted to just ask a question about the cost. You were quoted in the, I think, the paper, the newspaper, or maybe the legislature, that it could cost $1 billion to build a new convention center. Is that something that it would be worth it? What are some of the advantages of spending that kind of money? You already answered some of the questions, I think, but that's still a pretty big number if that is correct.
Michael, thank you for calling in. We're going to cut you loose, and you can hear Patrick's answer on the air. But thank you for calling in. Good question.
Well, yes, there was a story in the Buffalo News that one of the county legislators did, unfortunately, misquote me. I attended a meeting of the legislature, and we had a conversation.
It was county legislators.
it was not this county legislator. Let me make that plain.
He got the billion-dollar number correct, but not in the context of Buffalo. What I was speaking to was the fact that the state has precedence as far as supporting convention center mm-hmm. development, renovations in the state of New York, and the state actually gave $1 billion to the Javits Center for their renovations of that's currently taking place at the Javits Center. So that's where the $1 billion number came from. Now, to put in a little bit of context for the listeners, Cleveland just built a new convention center, brand new, and it's actually underground, so that there's park space above. It does have natural light that comes into it. It's a state-of-the-art convention center. It only costs, and it's more than double mm-hmm. the size of our convention center.
And that's a competing market for us.
It absolutely is okay. A competing market for us. But it came in under $500 million. So, you know, when you look at it in that respect, you know, maybe we're looking at under $500 million.
Let me throw this question to Bill Conrad, my co-host.
Sure.
You and I sat out at the Buffalo Bills Stadium. What do we call it now? New Era Field? New Era Field. For the World Juniors hockey game, and we froze out there.
Yes, we did.
But that's still a pretty decent stadium. I mean, we're talking as we talk about new convention center, we're also talking about new stadium for the Buffalo Bills, or just renovate or whatever. and both have huge price tags. But if you're going to, you know, if you're looking at both facilities now and what they can do and what they a new one could do, you know, we might be better off putting our money in a convention center that's going to be used year-round rather than
the Oh, I thought you were going to talk stadium. About combining the two.
Well, no, we could. I mean, there's that talk, too. But certainly,
if you do the park space, stadium, you can do a field up top.
Look, look, you go to football game. You go to a football game this fall in that stadium. You know, you get a nice experience. The convention center, you know, I went to the home show, I think, was the last time I was there. I'm looking around. It's you know, it's getting kind of dingy.
Yeah.
You know, where is our money?
I went to, a Lego show.
Well, good for you. we can't spend money everywhere. We don't have an unlimited resources here. Where's our money better spent? I'm just throwing this to you, Bill.
And would
the town of Tonawanda fund it? you're a councilman.
No. But proposing something like this, we all fund it. I mean, my question goes to, I mean, do we need, like, I keep hearing the word bed tax. Mm-hmm. You know, do we need a dedicated bed tax? Do we mm-hmm. push for this? You know, do we put it more on the visitors that come in because the hotels, I'm hearing the hotels are for it mm-hmm. because it doesn't necessarily appear in their price. It's the people that are visiting that are paying for it right. instead of putting it on the shoulders of our Erie County taxpayers. Right. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there are several different funding models that are out there that we should look at when the time comes. The county, as you know, is going through a study right now to look at the economic feasibility, the proper placement of where this convention center could possibly go, or what we could possibly do with the existing facility as far as any expansion or improvements. So I think once we get that study done, that's when we can really start looking at what those opportunities are. Yes, maybe some potential bed tax funding. There are also tourism improvement districts that are out there across the United States as a funding mechanism for not only the DMO, but for projects like this. But I think that's, you know, something that will be the next step is how we look at it. But again, I really want to stress the state has precedence for giving hundreds of millions of dollars for these projects.
Got 30 seconds before top of the hour news. A tourism improvement district. Mm-hmm. Who's part of that? Is it like down where the Main Place Mall is a business improvement district? Would it just be the hotels are participating in that? Or
It's not my house. No, it's set up through the hotel so that the visitors actually pay.
That's all I wanted to hear. It wasn't my house.
Yeah.
I don't care if Bill's house is not mine. Listen, we have to take a break. Alan Harris standing by with the top of the hour news. Bill Conrad, Tonawanda Councilman, will be here. Patrick Kaler will be here. We'll be joined by Tim Clark, Buffalo Niagara Film Commissioner. I'm Kevin Hardwick. You're listening to Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.